Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Hi, Chloe. Welcome to What You Read Next podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm a romance writer, and I also do freelance content writing, and I live in Pittsburgh, PA. I'm a mom of two little girls and a very cranky tabby cat, but I love her. And last year I was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, but I don't see autism as a disorder, rather a difference. It's been a healing, but also emotional journey to better understand myself and my neurodiversity. And that's only deepened my resolve as a writer to keep writing diverse, inclusive romance, because I think everyone is worthy of love. Everyone deserves a love story. And I really love writing stories that embrace that.
I love it. I love your story. So let's talk about what inspired you to become a writer.
That's sort of why I make mention right off the bat about autism. But as a little girl, I really struggled a lot to make sense when I was in school, when I was in social situations, to kind of understand what was happening between people, their facial expressions, the tone. I felt like I was very intrigued, but I was missing a lot. I wasn't diagnosed with autism until I was an adult, obviously, but I look back and that's definitely, you know, autism was a big part of what made people and relationships confusing. So I turned to books because they were a safe place to go where I could still explore the things that I was curious about, people and their relationships and their dynamics. So I read a ton of fantasy and historical fiction, like junior fiction, mysteries, young adult. And I just started writing stories about like a little girl who would go on adventures. And I think it was kind of a safe way for me to process and start to learn kind of how to navigate this place that was a little bit harder for me to make sense of than maybe most. And then as I got older, I started reading romance. And that was, again, a very helpful place to kind of have praxis to explore relationships and intimacy and trust and platonic and erotic love. Mm-hmm. But I think it's definitely when I started hungering for romance that had like meat to it and romance that had problems and struggles, because I mean, everybody struggles, but I really felt like I struggled and I wanted to see people working through tough stuff and still coming out on the other side loved. So, and I started writing it because I wanted to process it in my own life. I wanted to, Toni Morrison has a great quote. If there's a book out there that you want to read, if there is a book that you want to read, but it isn't out there, you must be the one to write it. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to start writing romances about people I don't read romances about. And here we are.
I love it. I love that you write diverse characters in your romance. There's some depth and there's like some diversity that is not seen normally in the romance.
I just think, you know, it means so much to me when I see myself in romance, and that still isn't very often, unfortunately, but when I do, it just, there's something really special about representation. And that's like, even when I went to Target a couple months ago and I saw a woman with a prosthesis, like a model, and I teared up because I thought I would have never seen anything like that as a kid. Mm-hmm. Or women with fuller bodies or people in wheelchairs, like, or a person using like a long cane who has, you know, vision, lowered vision. Like, this is so important for people to see themselves in art and in stories, because it says you belong. Mm-hmm. And so I want to be a part of what matters to me. And I think it's the right thing to do. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for being a voice within the community. So,
yeah. So I wanted to be a part of it.
What was your journey to get your first book published?
Yeah. So I thought a lot about it for a while. I wrote my first three books, which is one story about a couple broken into kind of three digestible amounts. I didn't originally set out to do a trilogy, but it kind of turned out that way. I just wanted to write this story. I did it. And I thought, well, maybe I'll publish it. And I just did a lot of research about the self-publishing process. And I ended up just working through that, starting maybe in the winter, two winters ago. And then I published last May. But I initially decided to independently publish. I didn't even try to query to agents or publishing houses. And that wasn't like because I didn't want to get rejected, because I know that's going to happen. Everybody goes through that when you query. But I just did it. There's a lot of collaboration in mainstream publishing. And I'm sort of decided I needed to start on my own. And mm-hmm. I felt like I had a lot to learn still about if people were going to like my writing or what they were going to like about it. I see writing as an iterative process. So I saw mm-hmm. self-publishing as a good time to build up some tough skin, take some harsh critique, grow, learn. My background, my education is literary criticism. So I have no problem hearing people give me feedback. And I saw it as a nice time to grow. But yeah, so kind of to that point too, part of why I think I wanted to start on my own is because it's a pretty kind of common thing for autistics to want to work alone. And just kind of to that point, real quick aside, I like to use like first person and say, I'm autistic, because to me, autism is like an integral part of my identity. I can't remove autism from who I am. And it's sort of a place of self-love and acceptance. But y'all also say having autism, which is person first, person with autism. And that's just works for me sometimes too. But I'm just here to say, I'm speaking for myself. Mm-hmm. If you've met one person with autism, you've met a person with autism. Like, we're not all the same thing. So obviously, for anybody hearing this, if this isn't familiar to you, always kind of see what is more comfortable for that person who's on the spectrum. If they prefer person first, you're autistic, I'm autistic, or that's first person or person first, which is you have autism. But anyway, so we're sort of solitary creatures, and I just realized I'm going to stick to myself for a little bit. I'm going to curate my reading group. I'm going to get my feedback. I'm going to grow. And now I am definitely looking forward to trying to branch out in traditional publishing. And in that period that I've been self-publishing, I've written an own voice contemporary romance, and it's about a woman who's on the spectrum, but at the beginning of the story, she doesn't know yet. And in that way, I bring the awareness of kind of hitting autistic burnout and really realizing you need to see yourself fully, and she seeks diagnosis. So, yeah.
That's exciting. I love it. I love that it's a journey. I love that you start as an indie and you start to figure out your way to run. And yep. Then when you're ready, you venture out and you can be a hybrid. It doesn't have, there's no rules of how publishing needs to look like.
Yeah. And actually so many, Talia Hibbert, Lissa K. Adams, Mia Sosa, like so many wonderful kind of really diverse, fresh, new voices in romance have self-published at first. And I was just definitely inspired to use it as a learning time. And I don't know, I think it's a great time to try to keep bringing diverse voices to traditional publishing. Like I really love what I'm doing as an indie author, and I love making these connections with my readers that sometimes it's a little bit harder to do when you're a few degrees away. Mm-hmm. But I just love the idea of, like, I actually was diagnosed after having read The Kiss Quotient. Like I read it and I was like, oh, hi, Stella's me. Let's call the shrink and get things scheduled. And I did, you know, I received a formal diagnosis. But even as I was doing it, I was like, I know this isn't going to be me. This isn't me. And it was. But I thought I really had this like yawning kind of gap in myself afterward, because Stella like knows herself as autistic. You meet her. She's like, oh, she goes through tough things related to her autism in the story, no doubt, but like she knows herself. And I didn't. And I just really loved writing a story because women are overwhelmingly diagnosed with autism rather than girls, whereas boys are much more often diagnosed with autism. And that's proving to be a lot more about like medical diagnostic bias rather than genetics. And I do have a lot of that information on my website if anyone's hearing this and they're like, what? So I'll give my website info at the end and go check there. But all that to say, I'm like, there are other women out here who are struggling to kind of figure this out like me. And if they can read this book and I get it traditionally published and has such much wider reach, that's like really important to me. And that's what's so awesome about Own Voices.
Yeah, I love all voices. Like, I'm Puerto Rican, and so like looking for other Latina
authors
is a very important part of me, because it's like, it's, you don't see your culture.
Yeah.
Not that often. It's like, there's been far few between women, you know, authors who actually are showing their culture and showing the importance of, you know, the family, the food, the
this. Yeah.
Anything is so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love reading about authors like Tyler Hibbert, who provides chronic illness, you know, into romance. Like, you, people struggle with chronic illness, and, you know,
that's they, right.
You should fall in love. Like, of course they should fall in love.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I think it's like, you know, bringing those voices are just giving you another idea of what romance looks like.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about writing. Do you follow an outline, or do you see where the story leads you?
I call myself, this is very technical, I'm a plotty pantser. So in writing speak and like author talk, that's, you would say you're a plotter or a pantser. Pantser being fly by the seat of your pants, or plotting as in to plot, obviously. Okay. So when I start, I have a core sense of like who my characters are. I picture them. It's very visual for me. I actually almost see my books unfold like a movie when I write, which is a big reason why I do playlists, because I really think it helps people who aren't just strict word people. Like, it helps them access the story in a kind of more imaginative way. But anyway, so I'll have a sense of my character's core characteristics, profile, motivation, and then just like basically how they're going to grow. Because to me, that is just the coolest thing about romance, is how much, at least good romance, in my opinion, people grow in these stories and they change in the right ways. Like, they come more fully into themselves. They don't change for love. They change through love.
Mm-hmm.
But so I also kind of just know generally what's going to happen. Like, I know the tropes. I know the main conflict. I know how it's going to get fixed and resolved. And that's my plotting. So that's pretty high level. But then the pantsing comes in when I like start writing. And as I write dual point of view. And my original trilogy was in the past tense, and this newer series that I just began is in the present. And it was just sort of a helpful way to differentiate them in my mind as I wrote. And I also just like doing new things. So anyway, but so I kind of start with one point of view, and I stay in that point of view as long as it makes sense. And then I switch. And then that sort of starts to affect the pacing of the story. And that might get changed a good bit as I edit, but that's kind of my process in a nutshell.
I love it. So how do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of ideas, inspirations, and characters?
Yeah, I think my head's just always in the clouds a little bit. Like, I daydream. And again, as I kind of explained at the beginning of this, like, writing and reading is how I make sense of people. And that's maybe why I care so much about books being a good representation, realistic in important ways about like health issues, sexuality, background, etc. So I read a lot, I daydream, and like when I'm reading, or when I rarely watch TV, or just when I'm out observing people in life, like my thoughts just, they keep spinning, they keep turning. And I just have like the little notepad app on my iPhone, and I just jot down ideas. If a bit of dialogue comes in, I'll throw that in, and then it syncs to my laptop. And then after a while, I'll be sitting there in the evening, and I'm like, okay, I think I have it. And then I'll kind of write my plot out, and then I get started. So it's just kind of a running tally. Like, I, for the Bergman series, I have things for each of the siblings already in my head, and I just keep adding to them as I go, as I think of them.
That's really awesome. So, all right. So do you share your work along the way, or do you wait until it's completed for others to read?
I share a little bit. And this is where, you know, as a person on the spectrum, having your neurotypical, your friends who aren't on the spectrum, allies in your corner is so helpful. Because what I basically do, like, I will think something's funny, but sort of a thing about autistics is like, we have very specific senses of humor, and sometimes we think we're hilarious, but like, you don't. And that's, we have super deep special interests and things we love to talk about and dive into, but that might not be like mass appealing. So what I tend to try to do is I'll share little bits of dialogue or like plot points, and I'll kind of ask my friends for feedback. I just have this awareness that I can be like a little socially blind, or maybe I'm missing the mark on something. And generally my friends would be really good about being like, no, that's actually really funny. Or yeah, I guess that doesn't translate. Like that's too esoteric. And then, okay, take it out. But in general, I do just kind of keep my work to myself otherwise until it's finalized.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you wrote a new adult novel. What was the process like and what did you enjoy about the process?
Right. So I think it was funny. Like I didn't start the story thinking, okay, time to write a new adult romance, but I just knew these kids were in college mm-hmm. and I knew they were going to be childish in some ways. Like you have to be, there's a lot of pranks in this book and there's a lot of vindictive behavior and there's a lot of insecurity and vulnerability. And I just thought that's when you're like that. Like, mm-hmm. So I just sort of dove into this world and I thought, okay, they're going to have some immaturity because college kids are on like a really wide spectrum of responsibility, like emotional maturation, their independence, like how good of a communicator, how assertive they are. And I kind of hearkened back to college. I thought about my group and kind of pulled from that I hope I created like a sense of realism and believability that these are college kids and some of them are a little bit more on top of it and some of them are kind of acting like they just got out of high school not too long ago.
Yeah, I used to work in college. Like that was my first career. So you got it right. The idea of a college community who has to juggle multiple responsibilities. Because yeah. I think people forget. They just assume they're like in college, you're just partying, you're just like doing nothing. And it's like reality is like, no, they have schoolwork. They yeah. also have jobs or they have just an athlete and all the different responsibilities.
Yep.
Along with family and all the different things.
Yeah, you're pulled in a lot of directions in college, you know, yeah. and you're coming into yourself in all these ways that are pretty profound.
Yeah, so you got it right.
Oh, yay. I'm so glad.
So let's talk about Willa. Willa is a top character. She's a student athlete. Her mom is sick. She wants to go pro. And she has a love-hate relationship with Ryder. Why was it important to share her journey through her book? Because she did grow up in this book.
Oh, yeah. She definitely does. I'm like really passionate about Willa. I think in some way I bring this sense of like the misunderstood woman to her. Because a lot of women on the spectrum, we kind of get read as being a bit like a dude. Like we can have more like of a blank face. We can be more analytical before we're emotional. This is just a generalization. This is not universal. And I have definitely kind of been that person who's been maybe slow to be able to emote or connect or really divulge, but has a really strong front and I'm really driven. So that to say, like, so for people who aren't familiar with Only When It's Us, Willa is she wants to go pro in soccer. She's super tough. She's super driven. And she has this really strong front, but she also has like a deep, almost like allergy, she calls it. Like she hides when she has to have confrontational conversations. She does not deal well with basically intimacy, like talking about hard things, opening herself up to people and dealing with difficult emotions. So that said, I just thought as I was writing this, so many romances have an emotionally stunted guy. Like it's like a trope, like half the rakes in historical romances are like, I can't love, I'm incapable, like da 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 da. And that's like, okay. Like some people think it's kind of cute. Like, and then, oh, they're so broody and hard to reach. Okay. But tough, closed off women in romances are really rare. And when I see them, they get so much harsher feedback. Like, and I knew I was going to get reviews with Willa, like people saying, oh, she's so unrelatable. She's so dramatic. She's so high strung. She's so immature, but like far more often. And this is like really what I'd hoped for, which is really gratifying. I saw reviewers saying that like they empathize with Willa. They found her hard at first, mm-hmm. but then they really got, oh, this is why she is the way she is. Like they felt for someone who's gone through repeated loss, tons of change and transition, personal rejection, and who's put all of her emotional eggs in one basket, her mother. And now she has to prepare to lose her. And that's not freaking easy. And I just didn't feel like writing another woman who just does it all with a smile on her face and can tell everybody about how she feels. Mm-hmm. And I also just, again, this is where representation is so important to me. Like, I just love getting these emails from people who are like, I never see women like me and Willa's like me. And just how much it meant to them to read a heroine who struggles to open up, to trust, to have tough conversations. And so I just, like, I always want to keep exploring new ways to represent beyond typical characters and their dynamics. And I think that's, like, the gift and maybe the silver lining of the autistic brain, like, the neurodivergent mind, like, diverge, to move away from. Like, I don't pick up a lot of these social norms. I don't internalize them so deeply as necessary or right. And it's just helped me, I think, maneuver beyond standard storylines to create people like Willa and Ryder. So I'm proud of Willa. I love her prickliness because it's, I think, honest and real. And it really does, as you said, like, it paves the way for such profound growth for her. And so this book is like, it's for the women who don't get the slack men do for being slow to trust and experience intimacy, like, who've been hurt and wounded and need that time to get close, because Willa waits around for the right guy and then she can do it.
Yeah, I love prickly heroines, which are, like, my favorite books, I would say.
Yeah.
To be said about those, like, you just, like, because it's not easy. I think some books are, like, the heroine is, like, so open and so vulnerable and so, like, ready. Yeah. And you're like, yeah. I'm not like that. I'm not like that at all.
Or you just, like, want to shake, you're like, don't pour out your feelings. Don't give it to him yet. He hasn't earned it.
Make him grovel.
Make him work for it. Definitely. Yes.
So I'm grateful that Willow was quirky, which is, like, just the kind of cat dad that I got.
There you go. Love it.
All right. So let's talk about Ryder. So Ryder, he lost his hearing due to meningitis freshman year. And so he goes through his own journey, but he goes through his own journey about hearing loss and then gaining hearing back. How much surgery did you conduct to get this part right?
Yeah, and this is always, like, a tricky thing, because I love writing about all these different, like, medical and mental health and emotional realities, but, like, I have to do research about them because I don't know a lot about all of them. So I do my best. I like I said, I have a lit crit background. Like, I'm well-versed in doing my homework and really trying to get to the bottom of things. But I also kind of really pay attention to my inbox, and I have conversations with people who give me sensitivity feedback, and I take it very seriously. And I will literally go back into my book and change things. I'll tell people, like, I take representation so seriously. So, but so far what I have heard from people, I have probably about a handful of people who've emailed me or in their reviews have mentioned that, like, they have partial hearing loss and that they really appreciated the representation in Ryder. They felt it was accurate. The frustrations of people definitely think, oh, you just can't hear anything. Like, no, it's like this frustrating, like, partial kind of teasing. Like, I can hear some, but I can't hear this. And this is too loud. And people think you can just slap on a hearing aid and everything's fine. But, like, even a lot of the older population, they find hearing aids really frustrating, but we're just kind of such an ageist culture. We don't really know that about a lot of elderly, that they find hearing aids. They're not a cure all. So anyway, in terms of what I specifically did, I went through, like, medical journals, anecdotal, a lot of people blog and talk about these experiences. So I read personal firsthand accounts. I also followed a couple really cool accounts. One of them is, I think, Project Hearing on Instagram. She has cochlear implants. And she talks a lot about, like, when she can't use them and when she can and how that's integrated into her life. And this is, to me, such a wonderful silver lining of, like, the work of research, is that I always end up following and finding these cool accounts that teach me about parts of life that I didn't know. From, like, earlier books, I follow a couple women who've experienced, like, spinal cord injury. And I've experienced men who are, I don't want to give it away with Lucas, but who are going through what Lucas goes through in Strictly Friends. And then same thing for Ryder. So I love kind of getting more exposure to it and learning. And I try to stay an open door that people can correct me if I ever get it wrong.
Lord. Yeah, I love it. I love that it was something that I did not see in romance novel, and seeing his own journey. Like, because it wasn't just like, I lost it and that's it. Like, it's a whole process. Like,
it is. And also, you know, it's interesting. I thought about this, and one reviewer had this critique, and I take their point. They didn't like that his hearing loss gets, you know, quote unquote, resolved. That he gets the cochlear implants and now he can hear. And I wanted to be like, go read my first three books. I've got a woman who things don't get fixed for. Like, I don't believe in that. But the thing is, I tried to think about, and this one account that I followed, it really inspired me that, like, people can love their disability. Mm-hmm. And that's not mutually exclusive from wanting accessibility. Mm-hmm. So that, like, you can love your deaf self And you can love your cochlear implants to help you hear. And so how I kind of tried to capture that was that toward the end of the story, there are still situations where Ryder doesn't get to use his cochlear implants, and they're pretty important, intimate ones. And for him to show, for Willa to show him love and acceptance in that, and for him to come into more fully embracing that, that was how I kind of wanted to represent this nuanced perspective, that you can love the parts of yourself that feel challenged by being in a normal quote unquote world that only accommodates a certain number of people, but you can also want the things that make your life a little bit easier. And both of those things stand.
Yeah, it was awesome. So this is a friend and makes you love romance. Why is it important to use this trope?
Romance. Oh wait, you said frenemies to lovers. Yes. Specifically, okay. I love enemies to lovers. I think everybody just, it's delicious. The tension, the enmity, like, because it really is just a little bit exaggerated, like the hating game. Could you imagine being a fly on the wall in Lucy and Josh's actual office? Like, good Lord, that could not happen. Like,
I know.
You know, it's absurd, but it's so entertaining. But anyway, so I realized once I kind of got their story down that Willa and Ryder weren't like hardcore enemies. Like, they don't spend enough time really pissed at each other. Pardon my language. Like, so I thought frenemies, like, it's just that kind of sweet, juicy spot of like, we spat a lot still, but we kind of have each other's backs. And Ryder has a great line at one point where he's just feeling so freaking confused. He says, you know, like, we're enemies who can tolerate each other, friends who drive each other nuts, both of those things, neither of those things, like, I've got a headache. You know, it's just this kind of fun place where their enmity ends pretty early in the story because their meddling Yenta of a professor is like smushing them together all the time. So they have to kind of become begrudging allies. And I liked showing this and calling it frenemies because I didn't want to set the expectation too high for like pure enmity because some people really love that. So it just felt like more honest. But I do think the story does scratch every enemies to lovers reader's itch. Like, it captures what I love about the arc of enemies to lovers, like opposition, friction, you know, then finding that commonality and connection and then realizing their attraction. So, yeah.
I love it. So what do you love most about writing romance?
Oh, so many things, honestly. Again, I think this is part of my, like, a strength of being a mind that doesn't kind of absorb the shoulds of society quite as rigidly. Like, I write the romance that I want to write for the people I believe who need to get to hear it and see themselves in it. And so when I think about romance that way, I love that it's a genre that can be written for anyone, that it affirms everybody's fundamental worth, desirability, their lovableness. Like, no romance has not always achieved that. And I wish we had more diversity in our romances, but I do think we're getting there. We're moving that direction. I'm also a really firm believer in body and sex positivity. I was raised in a pretty traditional household, and not in a bad way, but just in a way that if you have a very literal mind like I do, I internalized a lot of like shame and negativity, and just our culture back when I was a girl was pretty hard on bodies and on body image and on sex positivity. But all that to say, like, I love that romance reclaims love and intimacy as like worthy subject matter. And yes, I know the genre gets treated as taboo. It's called unliterary, smut, mommy porn, bodice rippers. But I really do believe that is literally embedded patriarchy. And by that, I mean a society that's been traditionally dominated by men and decided that pretty much anything by women and for women, for instance, romance, so we think, is second class. While men's stories get considered to have integrity, to, you know, be serious and literary. Like, and I posted about this a while ago on my Instagram, and that really helped me connect with some more romance readers. You think about it. You would tell a friend that you've read some slasher novel about like a serial killer who rips open guts and stabs people and chases them and does all this horrible stuff. People are like, oh yeah, that's cool. I read that too. But then you go to talk about, oh, what's that book you're reading that has the woman? And you're like, oh, well, it's just a, you know, we have this shame and guilt about something that's, whereas we're completely fine with talking about these horrible violences that are so normalized because men have normalized them and said they're cool. But then when we talk about romance, you know, we're not comfortable saying, oh yeah, I'm reading a book about love, physical intimacy, healing, and personal growth. Like, it's absurd when you say it out loud, but that's what it takes to kind of break down embedded patriarchy, to say, what are these things I hold inside myself that I judge and shame myself and other people for that we need to break down? I do think it's a slow battle, but I do think it's one that we're gradually winning. I think we are, with these diverse, intelligent, thoughtful, deep romances, we're pulling more readers into our genre and reminding them that it is worthy of their time, their mind, their feelings. So all that to say, like, I love reading and writing romance that has great psychological depth, has some humor, has a breadth of feeling, and in really, I believe a lot in this, ideally, like, realistic and inclusive portrayals of bodies, bodily function, sex, intimacy. That's the romance I want to read and write.
I love it. Yes. As a romance reader, I have to admit, like, I've been owning my romance reader part of it more and more. Mm-hmm. Like, there's
that's awesome.
It's awesome. But it's like, it's interesting when I talk to non-romance readers, and like, they look down and they're like, oh, okay.
You know? I know. Like, they don't, they're not even like, they don't even, they're not even gentle about it. They're like, oh,
yeah, they're like, so do you have other book recommendations? And I'm like, well, I do read some other genres, but
why?
Like, I really love it. It's like, I discovered romance late in life, and it was by far a breath of fresh air. Like, it made me so much joy. Like, yeah. I love the fact there's a happy ever after. I love the fact that there's like, there's some sort of conflict. There's like conversations. There's, I love consent. I love trails of like, you know, different body shapes and different you know, experiences. Like, I just love it. So,
yeah, I mean, it's life. I mean, this is what people do.
Yeah.
They spend time in their minds. They deal with their bodies and they love people. Like,
yeah. So yeah, for me, like, romance has been like such a life changer, and you know, it's like something like I'm so grateful. Like, it showed me like what healthy relationship looks like. Mm-hmm. And then the struggle with codependency is like realizing like, yo, that's not healthy.
You know? Yeah, I'm with you.
And give you like a different aspect of it. You know, thanks to romance, I've dealt with like, I still with anxiety, and I read romance that dealt with anxiety and dealt with the coping mechanism, and it just told me like, okay, like, that's possible.
Which, that's right.
You know, it doesn't mean, I just love that romance doesn't break down the character, where some literary fiction, some women's fiction is like, we're going to break you apart. We're going to snatch you, you know, and so bring you back together. Like, I feel like you don't have to do that, you know, to fall in love. Like, you don't need to be broke. You don't need to lose yourself in the relationship.
That's right. Yeah. And I think that is, That's something that I think really betrays, again, like, back to kind of patriarchal standards, that like, love is a weakness in men's mind. Like, it's like a breaking from your fun guy days. It's when you have to kind of change and become soft. And it's like, but love isn't that. And romance isn't that. Romance takes bravery and strength. It takes strength to be vulnerable. And again, that's what like good current and recently written historical romances are really, I think, tearing open. What you're saying, love doesn't weaken you or break you down. It, good love, not codependent love, right? Like interdependent, mutually beneficial and consensual love brings out a deeper part of yourself that you feel safe to know and be now. Mm-hmm. And that's what I actually, basically, if I had to say, that's my formula for putting two people together, my romances, is that whatever is this thing between them, makes that next layer of who they are finally recognize, oh, you're my person. This is my space. And I can be this thing I've been waiting to be, this person I've been waiting to know. Like, and it's not that you can't be fully actualized without romance. Any kind of love, that intimacy with friends, that intimacy with family, having that true safety, that true refuge of unconditional safe love is where we really find ourselves and come into ourselves. And romance just celebrates the heck out of that. And I love reading it. I'm with you.
Yeah, I love it. So what sets your romance novels apart? You mentioned a little bit, but what would be unique about your writing?
So this is something that I tend to see a good bit, kind of in the title of a review of one of my books, or like in it, people will often say something along the lines of, this was a great romance, like, this is a good romance, but it was so much more. And to me, that is just a magnificent compliment, because that's what I love to read. And it's definitely what I'm trying to write. In the sense that I think my romances are trying to make space for the complexity of what we actually feel when we're trying to love someone and when we're trying to be loved. And I think just spending some time in my stories to create that awareness and also to build characters that people aren't necessarily familiar with that reach new representation, that makes people feel like they're getting more meat in their story. Like my characters are not generally people that get represented as the star of a romance, that are depicted as central, empowered, sensual, desirable. Like I've got characters with paralysis, life-changing circumstance in their health. Some of them are anti-marriage. Some of them are in like very male-dominated fields. Some are men with emotional intelligence who are really up for consent and don't objectify or manipulate. Like my character is full-bodied, hearing complete, broken families, neurodiverse, anxiety, trust issues. Like I think what my stories in general are trying to do is help you see yourself, helping a lot more people see themselves in romance than maybe sometimes they do. And even if they don't see themselves, it's going to broaden their empathy for people who are unlike them. And I guess I would say if I had to put my romances in a nutshell, I'd say they're like as much, they're an affirming expression of romance that is real, that feels realistic, but they're also still like an entertaining and emotional escape from your reality.
Mm-hmm. I love it. So what can we expect for the next book in the series?
Oh, I'm excited about this because I'm still working on it. So for those who aren't familiar with Only When It's Us, it is the first in a new series about a big Swedish-American family. When I originally set out to do Willa and Ryder's book, I knew I was going to do the five Bergman brothers, but they are bookended by some really cool sisters, and I'm definitely going to give them stories too. But all that to say, so the first book, Willa and Ryder, it's a new adult sports romance, and Willa's the soccer star, and Ryder was going to be, but came into some health issues that cut his career short. But this book number two is about his brother, Ren, and it's a whole new ball game, or is this, should I say, the ice rink? But Ren and his leading lady, I'm exploring some topics I don't see a lot in romance, which I'm really excited about. We've got a guy who grew up being bullied, feeling really outcast, and he's very much a late bloomer. But now he's this total hottie hockey star, and he has no idea how to handle that, like, everyone's all about him. He's got sex appeal. He's got all these, you know, he's a real crisis against his identity and his youth. And he also has some hardcore unrequited feelings for a coworker that he's crazy about. But he kind of just hides all this behind a really awesome smile and this kind of easygoing facade. And then we've got his woman, and she is my first autistic protagonist that I'm really excited about. And she's also dealing with some health issues that are a little bit reminiscent of some things I've gone through. And I will be making a note about that in this book. She's just dealing with like the ongoing work of being neurodiverse. She's got some rest in bitch face. She's got deadpan delivery, and she has some really wonderful unfiltered busts and jabs. She's, kind of a tough shell, but a sweetie on the inside. Mm-hmm. Kind of a sunshine and grump dynamic, workplace dating, off limits tension. We've got a version hero, which I love.
Yay!
I know. Kalisa loves that too, right? That's like her thing. She's like, Chloe, when are you writing a virgin hero? I'm like, I'm coming.
Give me a second.
Oh my God, I can't wait. I have like the scene when he tells, oh, it's so good. Okay. Anyway, I'm going to stop saying my stuff's so good. I get very excited about it. But all that to say, and then still we're keeping this kind of lighter humor, balancing the heart that is very much in line with Only When It's Us. It's another sports romance, but this is set in professional hockey, so the NHL. So we're technically kind of past college, new adult, but they're still like in their mid-20s and dealing with lots of identity stuff because the 20s, they're just...
I know.
20s, they're so hard. You're in your 20s, you're going to make it through. I promise. It gets better. And some people love their 20s. I was not one of them. But all that to say, definitely expect a lot more playful, like crazy Bergman family antics, emotional growth, laughs, and some more slow burn steaminess. Maybe not quite as slow burn as Will and Ryder, because that was kind of torture. That was torture to write. just so you guys know. I know it's hard to, it was really hard to write too. I'm like, no, not yet. And then Willa and Ryder do have some great moments. It actually, the book starts with Willa and Ryder being there, and Willa's just, she's in great form. She's got Ren's number, which we see at the end of the first book. So yeah.
Well, I'm a huge fan of hockey romance. Like, that's like my go catnip. Like, I don't like the game of hockey. Like, I was telling somebody else, I don't like the game of hockey, but there's something to be said about the Hockey Heroes.
Yeah.
The ice time. Yeah. I have no idea what they do, but it's just really good.
Yeah. Ren says something about himself to Will at the end of the book, because this is the great thing. The Bergmans are a soccer family, except for Ren. He's like the black sheep because he plays hockey. He has lines like, you think I'd sell organs on the black market? I'm a hockey player. Like, nobody's into it. But yeah, it's just like, it's really cool to be a hockey player. It's an extremely difficult sport. It takes a lot of finesse. They're kind of rough, big guys. Like, I get it. It's my catnip too.
Yeah, this is awesome. now let's go to a round of recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with the audience what they should read next. So what is your favorite genre?
Romance.
Yay! So who's your favorite author? And you can say multiple authors.
Okay, yeah, because that's like asking me to choose between my kids. And some days I feel like I have a favorite, but I've never put it in writing, right? But all that to say, there are so many fantastic authors out there, independent, self-published, traditional. I think there's a romance author for everyone out there. My tastes run, I like some meat, I like some psychology, I like smart humor. I don't like real kind of coasting, sweet, easygoing romances. So for anybody out there that's more your thing, all respect, but you probably won't love my recommendations. But I love Tessa Dare. I know she gets a little bit of flack for not being super historically accurate. She has like some anachronisms, but whatever. She's hilarious. She's so funny. Her comedic timing, my abs hurt after I read a Tessa Dare book. There you go. That's a sales point. Get an ab workout while reading a historical romance. Burn off the wine you're drinking while you read. No. So I love her because she's just so smart and so funny, and she makes you feel good, but she also makes you feel like you went through something. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like cheese puffs. It's like a good cheddar cheese. I don't know. It still felt a little indulgent, but I got something out of it. Yeah. Sally Thorne, because I think about this a lot. This is my backup plan. If the romances don't take off, I'm going to get a PhD and I'm going to teach romance writing. Like, it's going to be a thing. Yeah. And a seminal text is going to be The Hating Game, because that is pretty much the perfectly constructed book I've ever read that has such a ridiculous premise. Like, the amount of disbelief you suspend for that thing, but you do it so easily. It's just, her craft is freaking amazing. Like, I am in awe. And I know a lot of people felt like 99% Mine was a bit of a letdown, but it was just a different animal. Mm-hmm. And I think if it had come before The Hating Game, people would have actually liked it a lot more. This is the curse of writing a freaking incredible debut is... how do you follow up? But yeah, Sally Thorne, Tessa Dare, and then not a romance author per se, but truly writes about the experiences of the heart, Toni Morrison. Mm-hmm. I cannot say this enough. If you read one kind of modern classic, read Beloved, read The Bluest Eye, because her writing is beautiful. It's clean. It's powerful. It's just, it shakes you to your core. It will like change you to read Toni Morrison. Mm. Yeah. Those are probably my three.
Love it. So what are your top three favorite books of all time?
Well, there you go. I'll lead into that. Beloved by Toni Morrison. Because it's kind of part ghost story, parts historical fiction of like the impact of slavery on the African-American psyche and on the collective white American psyche. It's beautiful. It absorbs you. It's sad. It's weird. It's creepy. I love it. Mia Sheridan's Archer's voice. I can't even tell you what it is about this book, except that I rarely like love super tender stories, like where they're just so sweet. But something about Bree and Archer, they just are so hurting and they heal so good together. Like, it's just, it's an amazing book. It's wonderfully constructed. I reread it probably once a year. I love the audio. I think everybody should read it. And it has some really nice representation. Archer's mute. And Bree speaks sign. So it's a really cool opportunity to see that representation if that's a part of your life. And then my third favorite book, which is not at all in romance, but again, it's very much about the human condition, the human heart, is David Sedaris's When You Are Engulfed in Flames. It's a series of essays, and there are just some really powerful ones. He talks about seeing his mother die. I believe she died. She's like dying of lung cancer while he's figuring out how to quit smoking. And he's doing it in a major Asian city where like everyone smokes, and it's just like the worst timing, but he brings his classic Sedaris humor and wit to some truly heartbreaking, but just such kind of, oh, hey, you're an adult. You're going to go through this stuff. Here's how you cry and laugh about it. Some people need to feel their feelings like during a time like pandemic, like this, that might be a great book to just feel your feelings. It's amazing. I love it. I can't recommend it enough.
I love it. So what has been a book you read this last year and do you love?
So starting with year 2020, which the dumpster fire year, we shall call it.
Yeah. This I canceled my membership. I'm done.
Yeah. 2020. You were supposed to be at the roaring 20s, but not that kind of roar. I don't like it. No. But anyway, so beginning in the year 2020 so far, I went back into historical romance after like a plus 10 year hiatus because I don't know what I was reading in college, but it was not this. And I just burned out, but I jumped back into who was reading it. Now I'm going to forget. And I really wanted to credit them. I'm sorry, whoever you are, but Girl Meets Duke, Tessa Dare series, the first one, The Duchess Deal. It was just heartbreaking and sweet and funny and lovely and sexy. And I really cannot recommend enough Mary Jane Wells, who is the audiobook narrator for a lot of Tessa Dare's books, but specifically for this one, because if you haven't been in historical romance in a while, listening to someone really bring out the inflection and the kind of context will help you get into the older language, especially because Ash has a beautiful flair for Shakespearean swearing. So that's helps you really access it. That's been my favorite book so far. I think I'm going to reread it.
I love it. I love the meet cute. It's the perfect meet
cute. Oh, it's so good. I love how his boots drop and he falls back and he smashes into the cabinet. The papers come down. Like, he just, such good comedic timing. Oh, it's perfect.
And the friendships, the unlikely group of friends, you know.
Yes.
Friend, you know, because she comes from scandal. Like, it is not.
That's right.
And it's like, and then she finds a group of friends who adore her.
Yep.
Unconditionally.
Yep. And that is, I think, my favorite part, honestly, of the Girl Meets Duke series. These are women who have each other's backs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're so affirming. They're so different, but they're never at each other about that. Like, they're only loving that about each other. And you just get to meet all these different guys who love this eccentricities, I guess, or vulnerabilities of each of these women. It's delightfully believable and sweet and accessible. Love it.
I love it.
Yeah.
So good. So tell us where you can find it online.
So I'm on Instagram, Chloe_Lise, LISE. My website's chloelisa.com. And there's a link in my Instagram to pretty much everything. That's kind of like Bookstagram and Instagram is where I operate out of mostly. I've just haven't been a Facebooker in a long time. I do have it. And again, it's like Chloe Lisa or Chloe_Lisa. You'll find it through my Instagram. I'm also on Amazon, BookBub, Goodreads. And I, because I am home a lot, but even before this, I do really prioritize and care about the book reading and Bookstagram community. So I love DMs. I love to hear from you. Email me. I think books are a beautiful way to connect, and I want to be available.
I love it. Thank you, Chloe, for being on the show.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends and share a review on iTunes. This is the best way to support the show.
Once you join a romance loving community, make new friends, and get book recommendations, join our Patreon Romance Book Club. For $5 a month, you'll be part of a virtual book club and Instagram chat and get monthly book recommendations. Please note I'll be donating 10% of the profit to a COVID-19 relief fund each month. To sign up, just join the link in the show notes. What's Your Next Podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a few days with a brand new episode. Have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What's Your Next Podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourrenextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.